The Scrabble Go Guide to Learning New Words. Quizzical, your dad's face when he hasn't got enough vowels. Skeptical, your mom's face when you try to say small is a word. Belligerent, how your brother feels when he doesn't win. Vocabulary, what you all build when you play Scrabble Go together. Everyone's a winner with Scrabble Go, the fun brain training game you can play with family wherever you are. Available on Android and iOS. Download Scrabble Go today.
So just remember that, you know, kind of set yourself up and say, okay, I'm going to start doing something brand new. It's going to suck for a little while until it doesn't.
Yeah.
And then it's great.
Nowadays, there's so many inspiring quotes we have access to right at our fingertips. Just a tap will take us to a quote on Instagram and Pinterest that will somehow inspire us or have us comparing ourselves to someone else. While we are all very much immersed in the day-to-day, it's important to take some time and mindfully think about the bigger picture. It's the bigger picture that aligns with our purpose. It's the bigger picture that adds meaning and direction to the smaller and somewhat tedious tasks that we do day-to-day. And it's always these small pieces that are needed in order for the bigger picture to exist and manifest. For me personally, sometimes when I get caught up in the day-to-day, I forget about the bigger picture, as you do, because you're human. You know, sometimes we do our best to live in the moment, but we forget about what we're actually working towards. My guest today is Renita Kelra. You may have seen her on the Bravo Arena hit show Million Dollar Listing New York. After Luis Ortiz took a hiatus on his real estate broker business and from the show, Renita took over the business with over $1 million in commission. What I loved about this conversation was how Renita's advice on how looking at the bigger picture is just as important as the smaller details of the day-to-day, especially in the real estate business, where people get their license and want quick satisfaction and instant gratification. Renita knows firsthand that the key to success in business is thinking of the big picture and thinking long term. And this is something that she'd know pretty well, given that she was raised by entrepreneur parents and she spent much of her childhood in her father's showroom on Fashion Avenue in New York City. On this episode of The Ginny Show, Ronnie Kelra shares with us her tips on happiness, entrepreneurship, and always keeping the bigger picture in mind. Welcome to the Ginny Show.
Thank you.
I actually watched you on our Bravo in Australia called Arena. I don't know why it's called something different down under, but for some reason it is.
Interesting. Sounds
and
better.
Bravo sounds very mafiosa type situation. When it's Arena, it's like, okay, I'm watching something. This is a showcase.
It also sounds better with your accent.
Bravo. Thank you very much. Well, Ronnie, I've got so many questions for you, but I kind of want to kind of dive into what I read about you just recently. I discovered that you're actually from, your parents were both entrepreneurs. Your mm-hmm. dad worked in fashion. Mm-hmm. What was it like growing up watching your father, like, in the fashion district? Clearly, you would have got a sense of creativity, glamour in New York City as well. What was it like growing up around that?
It wasn't necessarily watching him. We were involved.
Wow. So you were participating in the creations.
It wasn't a choice.
Right.
So my father came to this country and started out in the jewelry business and then realized that apparel was much more lucrative because he was doing costume jewelry. So he switched over to apparel. We have family in India that own cotton factories. And so he obviously maintained relationships with them and started importing from India and China. And so he was the middleman. And what I found was, you know, I was very young at the time, but my opinion was still pretty strong because he felt like, you know, I was the American, being that they were immigrants. So he would say, which shirt, which style do you like better? And I would pick, and then he would go ahead and present that to buyers.
Right.
And then buyers would place orders. The other thing was early on, I mean, as soon as I was in middle school and high school, once you start learning Excel, my father was like, okay, help me. Please help me create invoices, teach me how to use this software. What should I be doing differently? And it wasn't even like a question. It was more like, Dad, stop doing it this way.
Yeah.
Let me show you a much easier way to make your life easier.
Yeah.
We were implementing technology, you know, as I learned it. I was just teaching it to him and he was picking it up quickly.
So I read that you were also an economics major. Did that kind of spark your passion for numbers and spreadsheets and everything like that?
Totally.
Yeah.
I did economics because when I thought about majoring in business and then honing down a specific sub-subject of business, finance versus whatever. I thought, I don't necessarily know exactly what I want to do. I want to learn how to run a business and how the world sort of operates. So I thought economics was best because it was very general and you learn macro and micro, which applies in everybody's daily life.
Absolutely. And I'm curious to know too, clearly, because you were so involved with your dad's businesses from a young age too. And I guess it's a subcontinental cultural thing to go into economics, science. I always wanted to be a doctor till I realized I was terrible at maths and science. And that for the lives of people out there, I probably won't put that on them. But the fact that you got so involved, I kind of saw you on Million Dollar Listing. You were really, like, you really managed Luis in a way that I thought that kept him. I'm not kind of disowning his skills or anything like that, but you managed him really well. Like his creativity, his passion, like you were like, all right, Luis, this is what you have to do. What's going on? Like you kind of kept that on board. Do you think you got that kind of practice when you were younger?
Totally. I think, you know, my parents instilled in me a business mindset because I grew up in a family that when the business wasn't doing good, you're not doing well, right? And so I learned early on that, yeah, it's great to have your own business because you're your own boss, but you're also not really taking as many vacations because you feel guilty because it's your own business, right? And you're providing for your family. So it's what you do, your input creates your output. When I met Luis, I saw that he was so good at the creative aspect. And I knew that that was like where I lacked. Not that I'm terrible at it and I've gotten much better, but to me, it's more about numbers and how many cold calls do I have to make to get a pitch? How many pitches do I have to go on to get a listing?
Right.
Whereas with Luis, he was like, how beautiful do I have to make this specific postcard in order to get a phone call? So we really balanced each other out because he taught me it's not all about the numbers. It is about the quality of the work that you put out there, which is very true. And I taught him we have to multiply what you're doing in order to get real results.
So you kind of scaled his creativity in essence.
Totally. And we complemented each other so well that I think early on we both saw, wow, this person is really good at what I'm lacking. Right. And so that's why it just worked right away.
From an entrepreneurship angle, the fact that you were able to be like, these are my strengths, these are my weaknesses, it sounds like you both kind of stayed in your lanes, but you also crossed over when you needed to.
Totally. I mean, we taught each other a lot, right? And you sort of have to, in this business, be involved in both because we're salespeople. So there's no sales without really good marketing, but there also isn't any sales without organization and structure. So you have to have a pipeline, you have to use your calendar, you have, you know, so those types of things I think are necessary. And we taught each other a lot about the other side.
Fantastic. I'm curious to know too, because from the show, I got the impression that you guys were super busy.
Yeah.
So, you know, you had a clear set of templates or organizational aspects that you kept the business going and running day-to-day operationally. I'm curious to know, Ronnie, do you have a morning routine?
I do.
What is your morning routine?
So it's changed over the years because now I have a baby.
Yeah.
And so my morning routine is feeding my child.
Right.
But usually every morning I work out, whether it's yoga or going to the gym and exercising, there's some sort of exercise routine. And for me, that's like my own me time.
Right.
It's 45 minutes of not looking at my phone, not looking at social media, not reading an email and really decompressing. And I find that I need that. I start Mondays off with yoga because I feel like it's a reset to the beginning of the week.
Right.
It's also like a detox from the weekend. But I also find that like sometimes the Sunday scary set in and Monday morning, if I can just sit and meditate before yoga for a little while, it really helps me get through like, okay, let's do this.
Right.
New week, new set of goals, new me.
So with your goal setting and I guess your mindset shaping it up for the week, do you have goals that you look back on or do you kind of just reset them every week?
No, you definitely have to, you know, keep in mind what happened last week and sort of reflect on how to be better this week or, you know, maybe things that on my to-do list have sort of trickled over to this week. So it's a constant, you know, to-do list and sort of task motivating business that we have to constantly keep up with. We're also very much in the customer service industry, so I'm very conscious of who haven't I spoke to recently that I should have spoken to. When I represent a number of sellers, I want to be in constant contact with them. I want them to know that every day, what is it I'm doing to sell their apartment? And if they haven't heard from me, here's why.
On that customer service front, I did read that that was something that you're very passionate about, which I found was really interesting because moving over to New York from Australia, I found the I guess, communications very different, obviously, because different sides of the world and we speak differently and no one understands what the hell we're saying. But there's certain things about customer service which I think have evolved slash changed due to the technology era, because everything is so seamless and frictionless from a consumer standpoint.
Right.
And I think customer service now, in my opinion, I think it kind of matters more than ever, because I think because there's so many options out there, I think people are more drawn to referrals.
Yeah.
And they're also drawn to what they're used to and what feels familiar. So based on that, Ronnie, and based on the fact that you're so passionate about that, what do you think customer service looks like for entrepreneurs these days, and how important do you think that is?
So for me, it was very important. When I got into the business and I started working for Luis, I realized early on, wow, this guy's on TV. So people automatically associate him with real estate and pick up the phone and call him for that reason. That's a huge brand that he has. And I looked at myself and I said, what do I have? I don't have a Rolodex of friends that are ready at the time, 6 years ago, to purchase million-dollar apartments in New York, which is the average.
Yeah.
So I said, how am I going to get clientele and then maintain clientele? And it was really building a rapport with the people that I was working with, the people that Luis had me working for. I was able to build a rapport with them where they thought, this is customer service. We know exactly what's going on. We are in constant communication. Everything is super transparent. And I'm always managing expectations. So you're always in the know as to, listen, in 45 days, if we don't get an offer, here's what I think we should do. We're going to do this now, and here's our strategy. But if it doesn't work, this is what the next course of action will be. So everybody's expectations are always managed a step ahead. So there's no surprises at the end of the day.
Right.
I find when you call somebody, a seller particularly, and you say to them, I think it's time for a price adjustment, and they have no idea that it's coming, it kind of sounds like there's nothing else to do. Let's just drop the price.
Right. Of course.
You know, and to them, that's like, you don't really care about my apartment, where, you know, that's not necessarily the case. That just might be the best strategy at the moment, because we have to keep in mind the market bears what apartments are worth,
yeah.
Not the brokers, not the media. You know, the stock market to an extent, but at the end of the day, the buyers tell us what this apartment is worth. They put a price tag on it. And so if we don't get any offers, you know, we kind of have to adjust and see what's going on with the market.
Generally with sellers, I find that they're very attached to their apartment.
Very.
So that how they perceive it to be worth and what's actually worth in market value, there can be quite some parities between that.
Totally.
How do you break the news to them? I've seen Luis and Ryan and Frederick and all them do it on Million Dollar Listing.
Sure.
When you have to break it to them, what sort of skills do you kind of hone in to be like, I've got to tell you some news that's going to burst your bubble a little bit? Because it's not a very pleasant job to do.
Totally not a pleasant. That's not a pleasant conversation ever.
Yeah.
But what I find is when you come to a point in your career that you're confident in your opinions and it's only based on experience, right? It's not just because I know better than you. It's because this is what has worked in the past. And you say to somebody, you hired me for my expertise. So I'm going to give you some pointers and give you some suggestions on how I think we could present this apartment to get top dollar. Now, you kind of separate the emotion from, you know, the attachment from the apartment itself, because it's a product at the end of the day that you're selling. Now, to the seller, of course, it's the Taj Mahal, because they picked every cabinet, every corner, every paint color. And we have to respect that. Real estate is the biggest asset you'll ever own in your life. It's the biggest investment and typically the thing that you spend the most money on in your entire life. So we have to sort of take it with a grain of salt, and our delivery has to be super respectful, but also professional.
Right.
Because if I go to a doctor and I ask him, you know, his opinion on something, he's the expert.
Exactly.
And it's not my job to question their motives. They're telling me what has worked and what sort of is the general consensus. It's also, you know, somewhat of a guessing game even for doctors.
Yeah.
But they sort of tell you what the majority has seen. You know, you kind of hope for the best.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, that I find that I think doctors' opinion carries – it's kind of like the trump card for all the other opinions. Like a personal trainer could tell you, listen, if you don't work out, your heart's going to suffer. But if a doctor tells you, you do something immediately.
Right.
But your trainer, you're like, eh, yeah, right. But it's just funny how, you know, you put a lab coat on someone or a certain prestige title and people tend to react differently to it.
Right. And sometimes it's our job to remind the person, this is why you hired me to do this for you, because I am the expert in this field. This is what I live and breathe every day. So this is, you know, what I think we should do.
Are people taken aback when you say that?
Sometimes.
I find that too when
because they always think that they're right and they're not necessarily wrong, but you know, you have to sort of play that game where let's try it your way. And if it doesn't work, we will try it my way.
I guess that's a fair compromise,
totally.
Right?
Totally.
Absolutely. That's a great, great tip for entrepreneurs out there to kind of really, I guess, say, you know, this is what you hired me for, and bring it kind of back to that conversation. And I guess trying it one way and then going for another.
Yeah, if they're stubborn, why not? Yeah. Give it a shot, but put a time limit on it.
Yeah. Okay. That's great advice there, Ronnie. What's one thing that you feel entrepreneurs are failing to do these days?
I think quitting early.
Right.
Giving up too soon. I find that, you know, sometimes we have mentors or people that we look up to, and we see that their success has happened, and we're familiar with them after they are successful. You know, we're not familiar with the nitty grind that it took for them to get to that place. So it's easy to forget that everybody kind of struggled and hustled to get to where they are. And it's after watching, for example, a show like Million Dollar Listing, it's easy to think, wow, if I get my real estate license, I'll be a millionaire. But you forget about all the time that it takes and the nitty gritty work that you don't necessarily want to do that these guys are doing behind the scenes that maybe you don't see, or that they did behind the scenes 10 years ago before they built a team to help them do it. So I'm finding that, especially in our industry, people get their license and they want quick satisfaction. And a lot of times I have to remind new agents, think big picture and long term, because this business isn't instant gratification. And if you're looking for instant gratification, it's not for you. Because right. It does take a while to, A, get your first sale, and then B, build a business around it.
I like a bed that's really firm.
I need something a little softer than that.
Rest easy. With the Sleep Number 360 smart bed, you can both adjust your comfort with your sleep number setting.
Can it really help me fall asleep faster?
Yes, by gently warming your feet.
Okay, but can it help keep us asleep?
It senses your movements and automatically adjusts to keep you effortlessly comfortable. Sleep Number, proven quality sleep is life-changing sleep. It's our biggest sale of the year where all beds are on sale. Save 50% on the Sleep Number 360 limited edition smart bed. Only for a limited time. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.
Right? Because it takes time for people to refer you.
It's interesting too, because you've been at this for 6 years now. So it's not a short-term game that you're playing at all. You're thinking long-term economics, you know, use a pun again. But it's interesting too that I find that I think you've hit the nail on the head there with the lack of patience, I think, because I think with social media, everything seems so instant and what's captured is out of context sometimes.
Yes.
The only indication I got from Million Dollar Listing that this is a stressful job is the grayness of Ryan Serhant's hair. That's when I knew, okay, this sounds like a stressful job because everything looks so glamorous and quick and easy, but I know a sale sometimes can take months. That's true, right?
Oh, on average six.
6 months.
Yeah.
There you go. But we only see it in the space of 45 minutes. So
right. One episode.
Exactly, which takes 45 minutes. It's interesting too, like I see that progression and I think the lack of patience kind of kicks in as well. What do you think keeps you motivated to keep going and to, you know, obviously you've survived for 6 years now in a cutthroat market like New York City,
right,
with the markets fluctuating. And I read too that the markets were quite poor over the last 24 months. They've adjusted, right. But how do you keep yourself positive and going?
You know, it's that long-term picture. It's remembering that we own our own business. And in any business, there's cycles. So there's, you know, ups and downs. And when there's a down, the only way is up. So realizing that, okay, at this specific moment in time, I may not have all the business that I want, but tomorrow a new door opens and then all of a sudden your next 5 months are all set up. It's difficult, I'm not going to lie, because we have to be very self-motivated. We eat what we kill. And if, you know, there are days that you just don't feel motivated because nobody's calling you or follow-up isn't working, if you give up, it'll never happen.
Yeah.
You just have to remember that everything you do today is for tomorrow or next week or next month or next year.
Yeah.
In this business. So you have to do a little bit every day. And that's kind of what I ask myself at the end of every day. What did I do today that felt productive in the sense that could line me up for a business down the road?
Gotcha. Speaking of keeping self-motivated, I'd love to know, who are the people that influence you the most in your life?
My parents.
Your parents, right?
Yeah. I mean, I saw them come to this country and start from scratch, which, you know, it sounds cliche, but it's like such a big deal.
It is.
Because I lived through it, you know, and for immigrants who had accents and, you know, understanding how to maneuver your way around New York City, for example, and seeing my father deal with sometimes huge designers or huge stores and with the rejection and how he dealt with that, he never sat in the house and said, okay, I'm going to give up. It wasn't an option.
Right.
You know, so my mom as well, when she came here and they first got married, they were working together in the family business. And then she took it upon herself and decided after she had two kids, you know what, before Y2K, I think the IT industry is going to boom. I'm going to go back to school, get my computer science degree.
Wow.
So that we're not both tied to the same business.
Savvy lady, your mother.
Totally.
Very savvy. She's probably like predicting certain things about future markets.
She's the person who told me to get into real estate.
Right. I don't know if it's some hindsight that they have. But
I don't know. It's like a mother thing.
Yeah. Sorry, I'll let you continue.
Yeah. So, I mean, I saw that, you know, and my father was all for it. And at the time he was like, why, you know, why do you want to do that? Why do you want to work for someone else? This is our own business. And she thought, you know, one of us should make a salary. One of us should have benefits. One of us should have a 401k. And she had that foresight.
Yeah, your mom's got some serious.
She's a real smart lady. She's going to love this podcast.
I'll cut out this snippet, especially for her. I'll package it. This is fantastic. Okay, so your mother kind of, she went into IT, you know, sensing that there'd be a big boom. And,
yeah.
And I guess also that would change some form of trajectory when it comes to security
totally.
For your family, right?
Totally.
Because you can afford to take a bit more risks on what you love doing because you've got this stability coming through.
Right.
I think also that element is probably lacking perspective at the moment for entrepreneurs. I think, you know, a lot of people are complaining about their 9-to-5, but they think, oh, you know, entrepreneur life has so much freedom. But what you don't think about is you're going to miss out on your benefits. You're going to miss out on clocking on, clocking off. It's an entrepreneur doesn't really stop. How do you stop with your day-to-day? Do you have a hard line when it comes to things?
I mean, we try and have family dinner every night. We have a no TV, no phone policy. So for 45 to an hour, you know, we sit there and we recap our day. We try and not talk about work.
Right.
You know, we try and talk to our daughter about the ABCs and colors and shapes. So we try and unwind with each other, which I really enjoy. We go for a walk after dinner because she's walking now and that's all she wants to do.
Wow.
And we live in New York City, so we have to go outside.
Yeah.
our apartment is only so big.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I try and turn off as much as possible. But I'm, you know, we have cell phones, so I'm always connected.
Right.
And if I can't get to your email in the next 45 minutes, I'll get to it in an hour. There's always a balance. For example, we went on vacation for 10 days and I didn't put an out of office reply in my email box, but I also didn't check my email 5 times a day.
Right.
I told myself I'll check it breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Before we sit down to eat, I'll just recap. And that was good enough. Nobody knew that I was gone.
Yeah.
Except if you watched me on Instagram.
Yeah.
But I was still available.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Okay. That's a very conscious way of planning out your routine. I'd like to know too, Ronnie, what is your definition of happiness? We're getting deep here.
That is deep.
Then your eyes just went, what? What is your personal definition of happiness?
Happiness to me, it's very much being well-rounded. So being happy to me means enjoying what I do no matter what I'm doing. If it's at work or if it's at home, if it's being a mom, if it's working out, if it's going on a pitch, if it's working with a buyer, I'm trying to enjoy what I do and not take myself too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we take ourselves too seriously, then there's so much pressure we put on ourselves. And that sometimes is what causes unnecessary stress. And I really feel like what you put out into the universe comes back to you. I believe really in the power of like the secret.
Yeah.
So, you know, what you put out will come back. And so I try and put out positivity and you know, good vibes. And I find that that's what comes back to me. I mean, there are times where something bad happens and it happens to everyone and it's hard to stay that way. But again, you kind of have to think big picture, long term. You know, happiness to me is really just kind of being well-rounded in your whole life and enjoying what you're doing no matter what you're doing.
What do you think is the mindset to get to that feeling of I've got to stay well-rounded, I've got to kind of watch my thoughts and not put pressure on myself? What do you think is a mindset that you need to get to that?
I think you have to be somewhat familiar with yourself.
Some self-awareness.
Totally.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, realizing that you're not perfect and you're not supposed to be.
Yeah.
Like, these are my flaws and it's okay. And, you know, maybe you didn't hit your goal that you wanted to this year and here are the reasons why, but you'll try next year.
Yeah.
And it's good enough. You know, it should be good enough for you. Just being aware of, you know, the things that kind of take you out of that mindset and what you should do to get yourself back is super important because it's really difficult sometimes once you're in a bad place to come out of it and you can really spiral fast.
Mm.
But, you know, if you're aware of what puts you in that bad place and then you're aware of when it's happening, you can kind of work your way out of it because you're self-aware of what's going on.
Absolutely. What are some great books that you've read other than The Secret that you would recommend for people to work on their self-awareness or mindset or pretty much what they put out into the universe or the world?
Okay, so The Secret is definitely a must read. I read Lean In.
Ooh, I haven't heard of that one.
By the woman who works at Facebook.
Sharon Salzberg?
No.
No.
Not Salzberg.
That's the meditation teacher.
Yes.
I know who you're talking about, Sharon.
So she talked a lot about women in business and how we should lean in more often. And what I took away from that book, which was a huge self-awareness point for me, was that women walk into a room and say, the first thing they say is, I'm sorry.
I was just talking about that today because I realized as I was typing emails, I was apologizing for no reason.
Why?
Again, because I'm like, I didn't get back to your email on Sunday, but then again, I'm not working on Sunday. Why am I apologizing? And I stopped doing that.
And the fact that once you're aware of it as a woman and you realize the difference between the way that you react to the way that men in your industry or your peers or your colleagues react, they don't apologize.
No.
And we don't expect them to.
No.
So to understand that, you know, it's not expected of us to be sorry for whatever it is that comes after that statement. Also, you know, a lot of times realizing that some of the super powerful women in real estate are considered bad words.
Yeah. And I actually find that too. If you speak up or if you assert yourself, it's
attached. Or if you're aggressive.
Yeah.
But, and then you look at their counterparts, especially in real estate.
Yeah.
And the guys that I look up to versus the women that I look up to in the industry are just known as power brokers. But the women, people will say, wow, they're super successful and they're top five, but she's a bitch.
Yeah.
And it's like, why? Why does that? Why? Mm. Nobody ever talked about the character of the power broker
being an a-hole.
Right. That was just under her or above her. So a part of you, I think, as a woman has to like let go of what people think about you.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it's really what you think about yourself and what, you know, the people that are important to you think about you. And I'm not saying walk around and be that B-I-T-C-H, but sometimes perception isn't reality. And just because you're aggressive and you're good at your job and you don't take anything from anybody, as you shouldn't, doesn't necessarily put you in that category.
Absolutely. I think also speaking up as a woman in a workplace or even sometimes with my clientele, they're like, oh, Ginny, you sound pissed off. I'm like, I'm not pissed off. I'm just letting you know that this is what we agreed to and we're wavering away from that.
That's right.
And, you know, I think it's one thing to expect people to underpromise and overdeliver from a customer service standpoint or from a deliverable standpoint.
Right.
But when it gets to a point where boundaries are being crossed, I find when especially women tend to assert that or draw boundaries, it's kind of taken like, oh, she's in a bad mood today or is it the time of the month?
I'm
like, no, it's not actually. You're just crossing your boundary. And I just find that fascinating too, that these gender politics, because I wasn't really aware of it in Australia, but when I came here, I think because there's so many more people and so many more opportunities, it's a lot louder. But yeah, I just find that fascinating too with women, like the apologetic nature of it and naturally like you get plugged into that mire of the whole, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we do it naturally.
Yeah.
And after reading that book, I have stopped apologizing.
Wow.
Because why am I apologizing?
Yeah.
I would find myself just walking in to talk to somebody and be like, I'm sorry. Is this a good time?
Right.
Why are you just ask if it's a good time?
That's actually a great point.
You should read the book. It's really good.
Lean in.
Okay. She killed it.
I'm going to read that. Okay. We'll put that in the show notes and the resources as well. It's going to be very exciting. Ronnie, I've got a couple more questions to ask you. Now, I moved to New York 18 months ago, and I've been in search for the perfect samosa. Where can I find it?
Oh, my God. Oh, first of all, I love samosas.
Because I live near Jackson Heights, and I've gone there a couple of times, but there's so many options. I'm like, I don't know where to start.
So in Jackson Heights, there is Jackson Diner. Now, I haven't been there in years.
Okay.
But I've heard my father recommend it.
Okay. When you get an Indian immigrant recommend something.
Correct.
It's
in the city, however, I can recommend tons of places to you. There used to be a place. There was two. There was one in Gramercy, one in Tribeca called Tamarind.
Okay.
The one in Gramercy no longer exists, but the one in Tribeca is still around. And it's like authentic Punjabi.
Ooh, okay.
It's so good. So their samosas are great.
Okay.
Let's see. In Midtown, there's a few.
Yeah.
So if you want like a really good buffet, there's Darbar.
Right.
Which is right in Midtown East. I think it's like in the 40s, right near Grand Central.
Okay.
Huge buffet.
Wow. Okay. We love buffets.
Same.
Yeah.
I would say for delivery near my neighborhood is what I could really only recommend because that's where I'm delivering to. There's Rangoli and Imli.
Okay.
Both pretty good. Both have pretty good samosas.
Right.
You know, however, there is, I'm a really big fan of the street food.
Yeah.
There is a biryani truck.
I love biryani trucks.
Yeah.
The biryani is amazing.
Yeah. I don't know if they always have it or if it's like once in a while, but I've had samosas from the truck and they're pretty damn good.
Okay. Because sometimes people are like, oh, they're empanadas. I'm like, no, these are samosas.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Ronnie. You've literally changed my cuisine for the next 12 months. I appreciate that. Any advice for entrepreneurs going forward, female entrepreneurs in particular? You've clearly shed a lot of wisdom, a lot of light, and I thank you for that. But any advice that you haven't mentioned so far that you would give entrepreneurs?
I said it before, but I think just think long term. There's going to be so many no's before you get to that one big yes that you just have to remind yourself, this is just a part of the process. All the rejection is a part of the process. It's impossible to just start in the business and succeed no matter what you're doing. I feel that that's, you know, reality. So just remember that, you know, kind of set yourself up and say, okay, I'm going to start doing something brand new. It's going to suck for a little while until it doesn't.
Yeah.
And then it's great.
Well, that was Ronita from Million Dollar Listing New York. Make sure you check that out. It's Thursdays, 9 p.m. on Bravo in Australia. We'll put the local guide listing down the bottom so you can check it out on Arena. Ronnie, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's been so much fun and I'm super hungry already.
This is Acast Recommends. Every week we pick one of our favorite shows, and this is one we think you're gonna love.
Let's get real. Have you ever wondered why adults are so obsessed with Disney? I'm theme park journalist Carly Wiesel, and on my new podcast, Very Amusing, I'm discussing every story, secret, and shenanigan I know to bring you an inside look at what's really going on there. From secret spaces like Disneyland's private $15,000 dinner to surprising celebrity hot takes, we're covering all of your curiosities. Subscribe to Very Amusing with Carly Wiesel now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast is home to the biggest podcasts from the U.S. and around the world. Subscribe to this show and hundreds more now via Acast or wherever you get your podcasts.